everybody. You're listening to Breaking Beltway. I'm your host, Jessica Chasmar, coming to you every week from the lovely snow-blanketed Washington, D.C. Last week, we had a pretty great time. We talked about the dangers of charging minors under child pornography laws for sexting. We talked a little about the First Amendment and went after folks in Hollyweird who have completely run amok. But this week, we have a whole new news cycle to cover, and like it is every year, a lot of crazies come out of the woodwork on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. This year was certainly no exception. First, we have Reverend Jeremiah Wright, Obama's estranged pastor, coming out last week comparing himself to Dr. King and just ripping Obama to shreds. Media reporters were not allowed to record his speech, which was at a breakfast co-hosted by the Chicago Teachers Union, but CNN was able to capture part of it, so here it is.
He went on to compare Dr. Martin Luther King's famous quote, "I have a dream," to the Obama administration, saying for the president, quote, "I have a drone." We were able to capture part of this on a camera phone.
The truth about our policies and the policies of this country, every Tuesday morning there's a kill list that the president decides who we're going to kill this week. That's not the man of peace that you just talked about. That's a man controlled by government. It's a government based on militarism, racism, and character. We need to teach the truth.
Wright left the event avoiding cameras. The president of the Chicago Teachers Union, Karen Lewis, defended Wright's comments when he compared himself to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Wright argued that the famed civil rights leader was reduced to only, quote, sanitary sound bites, just as Wright says he had been reduced to sound bites.
Well, I think we always focus in on a very small portion of the work he was trying to accomplish. And very few people actually take that one step further. So Dr. Wright has clearly done that. These are the things that we talk about when we talk about social justice.
CNN political.
Yeah, Karen Lewis. Oh my God. I swear that woman is a miserable, miserable human being, an amorphous blob. She is a rabid Obama supporter who has a very close relationship with the president. She's angry because Reverend Wright has been reduced to sound bites, just like the Reverend King. I mean, to say that this man who once said, "God damn America," is like MLK is so shameful. And it's all coming from a black-dominated church. What planet are these people living on? The right tried so hard to make Reverend Wright a determining factor in the 2008 election. They tried to really stick it to Obama that he used to sit in this man's church. But like Karen Lewis said, it hardly got any attention. Now, 5 years into Obama's presidency, she wants Reverend Wright to be more outspoken and to be more covered in the media. I love how these people, they call these reverends doctors. I understand it kind of with Martin Luther King because it's a term of esteem, but PhDs do not make people doctors. Just like being black does not make you African. If you truly want Reverend Wright's message to be heard, then I suggest you start allowing cameras into his speeches. And then we have Sarah Palin, the apple of America's eye. On Monday, on Martin Luther King Day, Sarah Palin posted a Dr. King quote to her Facebook page. It said, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." But then she said in her own words, "Mr. President, in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. and all who commit to ending any racial divide, no more playing the race card." Now, the comments were made in reference to a New Yorker interview the president did over the weekend when he said, and this is the quote verbatim, "There's no doubt that there's some folks who really dislike me because they don't like the idea of a black president. Now, on the flip side of it, there are some black folks and maybe some white folks who really like me and give me the benefit of the doubt precisely because I am a black president." Now, God help me if I'm sitting here defending the president, but how on earth can we call this playing the race card? How can Sarah Palin call that playing the race card? How can we possibly deny that some people don't like him because he's black? And how can we possibly deny that people like him because he's black? I mean, that's all the president is saying. He's saying that race has played a part in his presidency, and it's been both an advantage and a disadvantage. Look, I get followed by a lot of conservatives, and to say that racism is dead among them would be an absolute lie, and it would be a disservice to my listeners to say that. I see it firsthand. You can't say people did not vote against him because of his race. You will never convince me that race was not a factor. And then we have the blacks, who turned out in 2008 and 2012 in record numbers, and you cannot deny that wasn't in part due to his race. So, Sarah Palin, what in the hell were you trying to pull with that card? What was your motive with this comment? I'll tell you what her motive was. It was to be provocative. And it turned out to be far more guilty of race baiting than Obama's statement ever was. I mean, these kinds of statements, they may gain people a few likes and a couple of news stories, but in the end, they severely damage the Republican Party. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, you can only win elections and really effect change by first changing hearts and minds. And, you know, how can we do that when some of our most prominent conservative voices throw out unfounded race-based attacks? I'm siding with the president on this one. I agree that his race has a factor in his presidency, and I think that race allegiance and white guilt certainly helped him win. You know, I used to stick up for Sarah Palin, but people really need to listen, and they need to think before spouting off. I know that I'm incredibly guilty of doing it too, but I'm not Sarah Palin. She's got to stop it with this or get the heck out of the public eye. But anyway, I'm gonna keep going on with this craziness that ensued on and following Martin Luther King Day. But first, a musical interlude. This song made me post a Facebook status the other day because I was rocking out so hard to it in my car that I literally almost got creamed by a fire truck. I may need to learn how to drive, but hey, I sure know how to live. Here is Meatloaf's Paradise by the Dashboard Light. At school, they were wishing they were me that night.
be so happy for the rest of my life. Will you take me away? Will you make me aware? Do you love me? Let me sleep on it, baby, baby, let me sleep on it. Let me sleep on it, I'll give you an answer in the morning. Let me sleep on it, baby, baby, let me sleep on it. Let me sleep on it, I'll give you an answer in the morning. Let me sleep on it, baby, baby, let me sleep on it. Wait all night. What's it gonna be, boy? Yes or no? What's it gonna be, boy? Yes or no?
Let me sleep on it, baby, baby, let me sleep on it.
Well, let me sleep on it.
Are now exhausted from dancing so hard to that song, because I know I was. Welcome back to Breaking Beltway. Thanks for sticking with me. Coming up, I have Washington Times writer Douglas Ernst joining the show to talk about some more hot topics. I also wanted to remind you guys that just about all the topics discussed here on Breaking Beltway have been covered by me in the Washington Times. So if you hear me talking about something and you really want to get more details, just check out that tab at the top of BreakingBeltway.com that says TWT Articles, and that will take you directly to my staff page on WashingtonTimes.com, and then there you can find the stories that I've written. But before, we were talking a bit about Reverend Jeremiah Wright and the slippery slope Sarah Palin is sliding down. I wrote a slew of stories this week about racism in the light of MLK Day. The day just brings out some real vileness in people. A black Republican candidate for Florida House District 68 tweeted on Monday that he agreed with a statement that President Obama should be arrested and hanged. Joshua Black tweeted agreed to a statement by another Twitter user who wrote, "I'm past impeachment. It's time to arrest and hang him high." And of course, people were very quick to criticize Joshua Black, including fellow Republican candidate for House District 67, Chris Latvala. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he just so happens to follow me on Twitter. But he said, "You aren't seriously calling for the killing of Obama, are you? I know you're crazy, but good heavens, you are an embarrassment." And I think that pretty much sums it up. He is an embarrassment. This guy, this Republican, Joshua Black, a 31-year-old, he moved to Florida in 2007 after practicing street evangelism in St. Louis, and he now works as a taxi driver. I'm not really sure what a street evangelist is. I'm assuming that's a homeless person. And then he, of course, took to Facebook to dig himself a deeper hole to try and clarify his remarks, but he really didn't. He said, "If ordinary Americans should be executed for treason, then so should he. Don't stop at impeachment. Remove him. Try him before a jury, and upon his sure convictions, execute him." Now, look, everybody knows that I'm a big fan of the First Amendment. I love free speech, or I wouldn't be doing this. But this is just ridiculous. Just because we have free speech doesn't mean that we should abuse it. And that means being more responsible when you're in the public eye. Republicans are in such a delicate situation that stuff like this, maybe not in his case, maybe, you know, because he's only a candidate, but comments like that from Sarah Palin in the last segment, those comments, they resonate with people. Enough with the impeachment crap. I mean, enough. We're stuck with this loser for another 3 years. Instead of using that time to cry for impeachment, shouldn't we be instead be trying to shape our platform? And shaping our platform by showing independents and wobbly Democrats that we are an inclusive party. That no matter, you know, black, white, gay, or straight, we all have a common goal of more liberty in America. I mean, how do you think we've been doing on showing gay people that they're welcome in our community? How do you think that we've been doing? I mean, the truth is, we haven't. In fact, we've shunned them at every turn. I haven't seen one Republican politician make a public statement about Go Proud leader Jimmy DeSalvia leaving the GOP. This is a man whose gay conservative group was twice banned from the Conservative Political Action Conference. I boycotted CPAC for that very reason. I mean, how are we supposed to win an election this way? We're not exactly in the best position to be turning away members at this point, and by kicking them out, we basically say that you're not welcome here. You're not welcome in our party. We're a very exclusive club, and they know that. And on the flip side of the coin, I wrote another story about this, the president of the North Carolina NAACP chapter. He was blasting Senator Tim Scott, a black Republican, for being the GOP's ventriloquist dummy. Reverend William Barber II, he said in a sermon on Sunday, honoring Martin Luther King, that, quote, "A ventriloquist can always find a good dummy." He said this to Tim Scott, who was appointed by Nikki Haley. He said, "The extreme white right wing down here in South Carolina finds a black guy to be senator and claims he's the first black senator since Reconstruction, and then he goes to Washington, D.C. and articulates the agenda of the Tea Party." So, and of course, Tim Scott responded classily by not really responding at all. He used the opportunity to honor MLK and talk about his policies, like his opportunity agenda. But, you know, this kind of rhetoric, it's exactly what I'm talking about. We as a society are so incredibly fixated on race. Why is it that a black man can't support lower taxes and lowering our foreign debt? I mean, why isn't it that a black man from a poor background can't speak out against illegal immigration? Why is it that in the eyes of a Democratic Party, a black man can't think for himself and break ranks? Tim Scott is a living, breathing individual. He is a smart, successful businessman. Why must black Democrats automatically assume that the white man hijacked his brain? What are they really saying about their fellow man? That's the real racism. You're either with us or you're against us. It's even more upsetting that these dummy the ventriloquist dummy statements came from a reverend. It scares me that people listen to these men like Reverend Barber or Reverend Wright and truly believe that they're listening to God's word. It surely isn't coming from my God. I think my God would be shaking his head at all these people, letting their egos get in the way of honoring a valuable man to American politics. This is Martin Luther King we're talking about, okay? A conservative black man. I really don't like to assume what people would be thinking or saying had they still been alive, but I can't imagine that this is the kind of discussion he was hoping for. Dr. King once said, "We may have all come on different ships, but we're in the same boat now." And I'd like to think that if he were alive today, he would strongly condemn the vitriol being thrown back and forth with race as a common denominator. We all come from different upbringings and classes and social circles. But the important thing to always remember is that we're all in this together, and we should try and make it a little easier by attacking people's opinions and policies rather than things they have no control over. You hear that, Chris Christie? That's right. I began abstaining from the fat jokes a few weeks ago for the same reason. We have to be civil. I'm guilty of it. Everybody is guilty of it, but we have to be civil. Especially for the GOP, because I still consider myself to be a Republican first, and I'll still fight for the GOP. But we have to be better than we've been in the past. Most importantly, we have to win. We're going to take a little music break with Etta Jones. I know I like to rock out most of the time, but I love me some old school, so here's Blackbird.
Gonna pack up all my care and woe. Here I go, singing low. Well, somebody waits for me. Sugar is sweet, so is he. Bye bye, Blackbird. No one here can love and understand me. Oh, what a hard luck stories they all hand me. So make my bed light the light. I'll arrive late tonight. Blackbird, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Breaking Beltway. I'm your host, Jessica Chasmar, sitting here with Douglas Ernst of the Washington Times. Welcome back, Douglas.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Doug, in the last segment, we talked about North Carolina's NAACP chapter president calling the GOP a ventriloquist and black Republican Senator Tim Scott its dummy. Did you hear about this story? I wrote it earlier this week.
Yeah, I did, and I think you had written that they had doubled down on...
Yeah, the NAACP, well, I guess Tim Scott had heard about this statement. It's just like some, you know, chapter president in North Carolina, but he had heard about this statement, and he was like, the NAACP hasn't even heard of this guy. Like, they don't even know who he is. Well, that turns out to not to be true, because the NAACP actually released a statement to Megyn Kelly on Fox the other night and rushed to this guy's defense and issued a statement saying, and I quote, "Dr. King emphasized love and justice rather than extremism. Unless we stand for justice, we cannot claim allegiance to or pay homage to Dr. King. In a state such as South Carolina, politicians, whether they be black or white, should not be echoing the position of the far right." So Dr. King wasn't an extremist? Pretty sure he was considered extreme for his time.
Well, it's kind of like the Governor Cuomo thing in New York, where if you're pro-life and you believe in the Second Amendment, Bill of Rights, the Constitution, you're suddenly an extremist. That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. But
yeah, I mean,
they want to call believing in the Bill of Rights extreme, then I guess I'm an extremist.
Right. I mean, you know, it's this mentality, if you're not with us, you're against us. Like, how dare a black man vote Republican?
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of people refer to it. They get upset when you refer to, like, kind of a modern-day plantation. But the truth of the matter is, if you kind of step off intellectually or psychologically, if you step off script, then they try and character assassinate you.
Right. Exactly. It's like, you know, they've been hijacked by the white man, and that's why they're in the GOP. You know, it's not because they want individual responsibility and they want welfare reform, or they want, you know, to cut back on or cut down on illegal immigration. It's always because the white man is his puppeteer. You know what I mean?
Well, if anything, black conservatives aren't the ones that are ventriloquists. I mean, you had something like 95, 96, 97% of blacks monolithically voting for President Obama last time.
Right.
That's lockstep. The 5% that actually breaks off of that, they're the ones that are speaking their own mind. They're the real, you know, if you want to talk about rebels.
Right.
That's black conservatives, minorities. So, again, I don't really get where they're coming from with the extremists.
Yeah. In the last, in the beginning of the show, we talked a little bit about Reverend Wright and, you know, how he had said Martin Luther King had a dream, Obama has a drone. He's always pissed at Obama. But now, literally 3 days later, a colleague of ours, Cheryl Chumley, she wrote another story about Reverend Wright. This time he said, "We've got some unfinished business on the agenda with some folks doing everything they can to get that black man out of their White House."
Well, they may have spoken to him or pulled him aside and said, "Hey, you know, yeah, you're kind of hurting the cause here.
Yeah, be a little nicer than to Obama."
Yeah, I mean, I know Obama threw him under the bus and he disappeared for a while. I think they told him to just stay out of the limelight. As soon as he walks back into it, they're like, you know, if you're going to say something, attack the right a little bit.
Right. I mean, he goes on to say one branch of the Tea Party is nothing but a 2.0 upgrade of the Lynch Party. And he said this at an MLK event, you know, to honor Martin Luther King.
Yeah, it just continues the same sort of pattern. During the government shutdown, they referred to conservatives as terrorists, people with bombs strapped to their chest, all that sort of kind of angry rhetoric that just, you know, kind of divides people instead of unites them. It's kind of ironic.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's at a Martin Luther King Jr. event and he's dividing people.
Right.
In the worst way possible.
I mean, you know, I'm one of those idiots. Even though I voted for McCain in 2008, at that moment that California took it and we knew that Obama had won, I'm guilty of sighing a breath of relief at that moment. You know, a part of me really hoped that just maybe America can finally move past this whole race thing. But honestly, I don't know about you, but it just seems to me to be so much more amplified now.
Well, exactly. President Obama had a really unique opportunity to unite the country and help kind of ease racial divides that we may have had. I mean, it was a great thing that he was elected in many ways. I think there was like a cathartic sort of national release after he was elected. But then he used that to say, you know, we're going to punish our enemies and reward our friends.
Yeah.
That sort of rhetoric.
Yeah. It's really a shame. I feel like, I don't know, just what's going on. It's a shame because this MLK Day, it just brought out some really crazy stuff. I mean, I'm dedicating an entire show to it just from this one day has sparked a lot of angry rhetoric and racist rhetoric from both sides. But with that, we're actually going to move into a short musical break. We're going to try and get into the theme a little bit. We're going to play, you had an idea for a Pearl Jam song. What was that again?
Right, so the song is WMA, White Male American. I think it's from like 1993-94, their Versus album.
Uh-huh.
Talk about being born white, you kind of win the lottery. They talk about a cop who, you know, racial profiling, things of that nature. Pass up the white guy to go to the black guy.
Gotcha. And then we'll follow that up with some Depeche Mode's People Are People, because that's an awesome song. All right, you're listening to Breaking Beltway.
Thank you.
welcome back to Breaking Beltway. Doug, you wrote a blog post a little while ago about an article by Suey Park that she published in the Washington Post about how racism has affected her life. She's Asian, she's liberal, she's a feminist, and she is pissed. Why don't you tell us a little bit about her?
Sure, no problem. Well, it was actually a kind of a fawning piece that the Washington Post did on her. She is a feminist, and she started this hashtag. Well, she kind of starts a lot of feminist hashtags that kind of that go trending. The one that I think got her the Washington Post piece was called "Not Your Asian Sidekick."
The hashtag "Not Your Asian Sidekick,"
where she said she wanted to create a space where Asian American feminism does not leave any group behind, and where there'll be anything but a sidekick. So, long story short, it gets into, she talks about her life. Growing up, she felt pressure to be skinny, and she was forced to wear...
Oh, no, that never happens to anybody.
Right. Well, that was my thing. She talked about all these pressures that, you know, any family has. You know, you have sibling rivalries.
Right, her parents
are smart.
Her parents want her to, you know, succeed, and she gets picked on by the kids for looking different. Like, these are all things that normal kids deal with every single day in America.
Right, so instead of just kind of understanding that there are mean people out there, that kids are mean to one another, and that, you know, bullies shouldn't define who you are and your self-worth, she decided that some sort of weird white power structure was acting against her and people of color and minorities, and that was, you know, the thing that was holding minorities, you know, specific minority groups back in the United States.
Didn't she call it structural whiteness?
Yeah, it was structural whiteness, and, you know, if you go to her Twitter feed, it's weird. Like, the Washington Post, you would think they would do a little bit more research on these people.
Right.
You know, she says only white people can be racist. She favorites tweets, you know, where people refer to, quote, whitey. You know, I don't know if that's the person you want to be the standard bearer for your...
Right.
For a new feminist movement.
I mean, did this article criticize her at all, or was it just a feature piece on her life?
Yeah, it was just kind of a really nice, you know, piece about how this is upstart kind of feminist, is breaking down walls, that sort of thing. And for the most part, it was just kind of like a glowing piece. And it didn't talk about, you know, the only white people can be racist type of rants that she goes on her Twitter feed or her followers. You know, so I wrote about this, and of course, you know, they accused me of being a white supremacist, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, because you're white, so that automatically makes you a supremacist, right?
Somebody, one of my blog followers, they were like, aren't you married to an Asian person?
Yeah, right?
You know? It was like, I'm taking racism to a whole new level by marrying an Asian woman,
I guess. Yeah, she's your token Asian, right?
I'm sure that they would say something along those lines.
Oh my gosh, I love how in your blog post you attack her view on structural whiteness, and you countered it by asking if she'd prefer something more structurally Korean. I love that.
Yeah, she could always go to North Korea. It's all Korean, and,
that's really structured, right?
Well, and that's the other thing. If you look at South Korea, take a look at both countries. One is a big black hole when you look at it from satellite pictures, and one of them that has had quite a lot of, quote, structural whiteness with Western civilization, U.S. Army troops, you know, defending them, has prospered quite a bit. So, I don't know. It's just kind of interesting how they always seem to, people like Suey seem to see themselves as some sort of victim, and it creates a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Absolutely. I had never even heard of her until you showed me that blog post, and I'm glad you did, because I, you know, we've been talking about black, white all night, so it's, you know, interesting to take it from that spectrum. But, you know, I don't know what it's like to be an Asian American here, but she talks a little bit about, you know, kids making their eyes squinty on the playground and making fun of her eyes and stuff like that. It's just, you know, stuff like that, I just feel like... happens to everyone. You know what I mean? I feel like that kind of bullying and just kids being kids and being picked on, I don't know, if she had a funny haircut or she smelled bad, she would have been made fun of too.
you know, well, you could look at like an Eminem growing up, you know, in Michigan as a white kid being picked on because he's white.
Right.
Or, you know, bullies will pick on you if you're fat, if you're skinny, if you're white, if you're black, if you're Hispanic, if you have a learning disability.
Sure.
It's like there are mean people out there.
Right.
And if you live in a country with, you know, hundreds of millions of people, you're going to find some mean ones. So you could either sit around and complain about how there are mean people all the time, or you could just get off your butt and, you know, start succeeding.
Yeah, yeah. And this kind of falls into, you know, a lot of controversy is surrounding Richard Sherman right now in the Seahawks. He's headed to the Super Bowl. And he kind of had a weird moment on television the other day with Aaron Andrews. Here's the clip.
About you.
Like Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Buddy, I'm gonna set it for you real quick. L.O.B.
Alright, before... And Joe, back over to you.
I love that. I love it so much.
I don't know what L.O.B. stands for.
I don't know what L.O.B. is, but she's like, who the hell is talking about you? What are you talking about?
Yeah, if any of your listeners watched Rocky III, he reminds me of Mr. T as Clubber Lang, just going off on these insane rants.
This is the same guy who went off on Skip Bayless not too long ago, telling him, you know, in my 24 years of life, I'm better at life than you. Did you remember that? Just going off on this poor reporter. And he went off
on Skip Bayless, and then there's also a clip online of one of the Washington Redskins. I only know that because I live in the D.C. area, punching him in the face after a game.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I'm bringing this up on our racism show because apparently, you know, because of this outburst, he has gotten a slew of attacks. And we know that this is true because a lot of the reporters who are close to him have also gotten a lot of racial attacks concerning Richard Sherman, calling him a thug, you know, the N-word, you know, all these things, saying that his behavior is indicative of thug culture, that he has no class. And he is just, like, totally put, you know, thrown aback because he, you know, had this, you know, emotional moment on television. However, he's known for having many emotional moments. So what do you think about all of the racist attacks he's gotten?
The racist attacks or people trying to say that any sort of criticism is essentially racism?
Well, I guess both because, I mean, obviously you can't call anyone a thug without being racist.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. It's one of those things where, you know, you could turn on MTV, BET, VH1, and you could watch an entire culture that is centered around, you know, musically or lyrically around thug culture.
Right.
And then a guy essentially does, like, some weird Busta Rhymes impersonation on, you know, after the game, and someone calls him a thug, and all of a sudden you're a racist. And
right.
You know, I'm sure he's not. He's probably a pretty nice guy in football.
I don't know. He doesn't sound to me like a nice guy at all. From what I've seen, he sounds like a horrible person. I mean, he immediately made me a Broncos fan.
Oh, definitely. That was a quick way to make people want the Broncos to win the Super Bowl for sure.
I love how Skip Bayless handled him. He's like, dude, you can trash talk me all you want. This is great television.
Yeah, and that might be part of the reason why he did that. Who knows? You know, people make analogies to, like, the WWE wrestling. It was something right out of a wrestling playbook,
yeah.
Basically.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see when is the Super Bowl? Sometime in February. I can't wait to see what happens as, you know, leading up to and during the Super Bowl. He seems like a loose cannon. And way egotistical. He might be getting a little too big for his britches. I hope he plays well, because he's got a big head.
Well, that's one of those things. As these guys get older, they get slower. And when they're not as fast, they get burned for touchdowns. And he's going to have a rough time when he gets older in the league, because he's not going to be the same player that he is right now. And they're going to rub it in his face in a couple of years.
It's going to be a tough dose of reality, because he's He's getting too big for his britches, that's for sure. Humbleness is a very admirable quality. But with that, thank you, Doug, for joining us again. I always enjoy having you on the show, and I know our listeners do, too.
Thanks. I always enjoy being here. So anytime you need me, I'm there for you.
Awesome. And we're actually going to close the show out with some Bob Marley's Redemption song. But thank you for tuning in. You guys can hear me every week at BreakingBeltway.com or the iTunes store. Thanks for listening.
Merchant ships, minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. All I ever have, redemption songs. Songs of freedom, songs of freedom.